for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Stay tuned for the Doctor's Inn.
Jack sits on you look older than me, and I'm 71. You're falling apart, you're not living right. I went to the doctor, and the doctor said loud, you got to stop hanging out with that old in crowd. Living's a battle, and you're losing the fight. I went to the doctor, and the doctor said, boy, your body is a temple. It's not a toy. Fill up this here paper cup and give it to the nurse. Don't spill it now. I went to the doctor. Doctor said, friend, this should be the middle, but it could be the end. You better get better, else you're gonna get worse. Oh, I went to the doctor. Oh, I went to the doctor. I went to the doctor, and the doctor said, sir, we got back the x-ray. Everything's a blur. But it's all positive, that's what every single test shows. I went to the doctor. Doctor said, kid, it was something that you ate or drank, it's something that you did, and it's all in.
Hello, I'm Dr. Ken Logan, a family practitioner here in Chico, California. And I do the Doctor's Inn the third Thursday of every month. And what I'd like to do is cover subjects such as health and medical-related subjects that I think you, the listener, might be interested in hearing about. And what I would really like to do is cover subjects, medical or health-related, that you would like for me to cover, and maybe a guest that you would like me to have on the show. If that was the case, in other words, if you had something you wanted me to cover, you could email me at my email address and let me know that, and I'll do my best to get that show on. And again, I do this the third Thursday of each month from 6 to 7 in the evening. My email address is klogan.md@yahoo.com, and K Logan as in K, the letter K, so klogan.md@yahoo.com. You need to know that the opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, or underwriters. And speaking of underwriters, the Doctor's Inn is made possible by the generous contributions of you, the KZFR supporters, and by Friends of the Arts, your state local partner to the California Arts Council. Since 2001, Friends of the Arts has been creating economic opportunity by producing and supporting events and spreading the word out about arts and culture through their bi-monthly newsletters. To stay in the know about the arts or have your event listed, visit Friends of the Arts and stay in touch. And by Bigfoot Carpet, providing professional installation of carpet, tile, vinyl, laminate, and hardwood flooring for the greater Chico area. Bigfoot Carpet carries a large in-stock selection and is located at 3436 Highway 32 in Suite 100. Bigfoot Carpets can be reached by calling 530-879-0000, or by visiting bigfootcarpets.com. So In today's show, The Doctor's In, I'm going to lay out situations related to symptoms that we human beings have in our respiratory tracts. That is coughing, sneezing, runny nose, head congestion, sore throat, sometimes fatigue, with or without fever, with or without body aches, sometimes headache. These are such common symptoms in us humans, especially this time of year. These symptoms end up messing with our lives in a variety of ways, as you know, including just not feeling good, but also missing work, missing school, as you know, missing work because your child or children are ill from these symptoms. So we often don't know what we should do and whether or not we should seek medical care. So I want to put in my two cents on some of that information relative to that. We often look for medications such as over-the-counter medications or prescriptions such as antibiotics, which sometimes are appropriate and sometimes are not. Antibiotics, you know, overuse over time is a negative to our community of human beings, and resistance occurrence goes up with overuse. Antibiotics actually throughout the world. And there's a lot of information out there coming at you on the internet and the TV and lined up on the drugstores and grocery store shelves about what to do for yourself when you get these common respiratory tract symptoms. And it seems to me that the public is often at the mercy of the profiteers that make and sell these products. And we're even at the mercy of the healthcare provider that you may be seeing somewhere on relative to how they direct you into how to help yourself, what kind of advice they give. There's a hodgepodge of options out there pulling you in various directions. So, and again, I'm talking about relative to you taking care of yourself with respiratory tract symptoms. So for today's show, I'm going to lay out the subject as I see it through my eyes as a family doc, but also as a parent and a grandparent. So we medical folks generally categorize these respiratory symptoms and situations into diagnosis categories or medical conditions. How we medical folks have been trained to categorize these respiratory conditions generally is not significantly complicated. However, we medical folks, when we're seeing our patients, we do have to take some time to think. Keyword here is time, and keyword is thinking, in order to be true to how we've been trained when we make a diagnosis and when we talk to our patients about how to help themselves with whatever respiratory problem that they have. So to say again, we medical folks have to take our time to think and take our time to communicate our advice as best we can to our clients or patients that we're seeing. And if your healthcare provider is not taking time to discuss with you what you're going on and answer what's going on with you and your respiratory tract situation, then ask them. Sit in the room until they talk to you about it. That's what I'm saying. Next, I want to bring up early on in the discussion specific categories of causes of respiratory tract symptoms, because I think it's important for all of us to be on the same page when we're talking, of course, about the causes of our symptoms, because that'll determine what should be done. Infections are the causes that I'm going to really zero in on mostly here today, and I want to talk about the infection causes by delineating the two general categories of organisms that do that. In other words, viruses and bacteria. The distinguishing between the two relative to our illness that we have is very important, especially relative to what to do about it. But before I get into that, I want to not forget that there are other causes of respiratory symptoms in humans. And that's what I'm talking about, humans. For instance, there are non-infectious causes of some respiratory symptoms. Asthma is one of those, including mild asthma. Some people may have asthma-like symptoms, and they really don't even know that they have a mild asthma. cough actually is the most common symptom of asthma. Wheezing is not the most common symptom. It's actually cough. There's another one related to cough without any other respiratory symptoms that sometimes can occur when acid secretions from the stomach, a slight amount of that when we're laying and are at night, we're flat, and gravity being what it is, apparently, and depending on the little sphincter in you between your esophagus, the swallowing tube, and your stomach, you might get this slight amount of acidic kind of secretion slightly up into the upper respiratory tract at night. And some people with this, they'll have a naggy cough without any other respiratory tract symptoms, such as no other symptoms that would make you think they have an infection. Another important cough issue and subject that I just have to talk about is a little bit is a person that has a persistent cough and doesn't include any other respiratory tract and symptoms in somebody who regularly smokes or vapes tobacco. And by persistent cough, I mean a cough that's present for more than a month or two. And again, without any other symptoms of respiratory tract. If that's occurring in someone, again, who's smoking or vaping tobacco regularly, that person ought to be checked out by their doctor or their healthcare professional sometime. If a person, okay, now I'm going to say a bad thing now. If a person was to develop lung cancer, it would need to be discovered early on, in order to be able to be treated in a way that could ever be even close to being a cure. Now, there's a subject of discussion these days in the medical world about the potential for people who regularly smoke or vape tobacco to be screened for lung cancer on a regular basis via something called low-dose chest CT or CAT scan annually. But it appears to me, in studying this, that the subject of screening in that fashion is somewhat controversial. So I'm not going to get into that controversy today. If that is something that you would like me to cover on this show sometime, that is the issue of lung cancer screening as in people who smoke or vape tobacco, then let me know if that's something you want me to get into on this show sometime. And again, my email is klogan.md@yahoo.com. Okay, back to infections as a cause of respiratory tract infections. That is, symptoms of cough, runny nose, head congestion, possibly sore throat, with or without fever. I'd like us to attempt to get on the same page again relative to the issues of viruses versus bacterias relative to respiratory illnesses. Let me start with what bacteria are. Bacteria are single-celled organisms. The vast majority of bacteria are in charge of themselves. That is, they live independently relative to the cells of other plants or animals. Unlike viruses, viruses are different relative to this, and I'll discuss them later. Most bacteria in the world are our friends, are fine. And some bacteria we absolutely need in and on us as humans to be healthy and alive. One simple example of that is in our gastrointestinal tract. I think most of you may know that we live with bacteria there, and we need those bacteria, and they need us. Now, unfortunately, there are some bad guy bacterias, and they can cause some things like pneumonia, which is lung infection, and other illnesses. Our immune system, the white blood cells of our immune system, are turned on when we have bad bacteria. And that immune system is turned on, and those white blood cells go around devouring these bad bacteria when they're causing us problems. And those white blood cells in our immune system actually make antibodies as well to help us. Okay, that's bacteria. Now I'm going to talk about viruses. They are different. viruses are not independent organisms like bacteria. In other words, viruses are not made of cells per se. They are strands of proteins called nucleic acids, like RNA, which is ribonucleic acid, or DNA, which is deoxyribonucleic acid. And sometimes they have a shell, kind of a covering around the nucleic acid. So viruses, because they're not cells, they don't have the ability to do their own reproduction like bacteria do. In other words, viruses need to have the cells that they've attacked or live in, plant cells or animal cells. Though the machinery inside the host cells, the plant or animal cells that the virus is living in, do the making of the viruses once the virus sets that occurrence into play. Unfortunately, some of these viruses, however, when they're in the body, in different areas of the body, like the respiratory tract, can cause bad things to happen, like irritation and inflammation of those tissues. Conditions of the respiratory tract specifically caused by viruses that I'm going to discuss today and differentiate today from each other are the common cold as one entity or medical condition and influenza or the flu as another medical entity or condition, both of which are caused by viruses. And again, the immune system fights those off. The white blood cells that make antibodies do make antibodies or these proteins against viruses to help us fight off that infection, whichever virus infection we have. Now, I said I was going to talk about the common cold and influenza and compare those two. What I'm not going to talk about specifically, but I'm going to mention somewhat here, is bronchitis, sinusitis, and pharyngitis, such as a strep throat, because I think terminology here, it would be good if we were all on the same page relative to the terminology. Just so you know, listeners, bronchitis. Bronchitis means the respiratory infection, the upper respiratory infection, is actually the large air tubes. So in our chest, we have the main tube that we breathe through, the trachea, and then that branches in the chest to these larger tubes that then branch into each lung on each side of the body. Well, the larger tubes in the upper part of that are called bronchi. So bronchitis means that there's an infection in those larger tubes in the upper part of the chest, not down low in the lungs themselves. That would be pneumonia. But in these upper tubes in the upper part of the chest, the bronchi, we call it bronchitis. Now, bronchitis, if a person has bronchitis, it doesn't mean it's a bacteria cause or a virus cause or anything. It just means there's an infection up there or an inflammation up there in those large air tubes, the bronchi. I will tell you that in my experience throughout the years, I've been doing this 35 years, actually. Yes, I'm on Medicare, and yes, I get Social Security. I'm getting old. The most common cause of bronchitis is virus, not bacteria. So if somebody says to you, oh, I got a bronchitis, I need an antibiotic, that's actually not true. That's not appropriate. That's not how we were trained or learned, and that's not the physiology and medical knowledge that we learn in medical school. It could be a bacteria, but it's more likely a virus initially. But remember, what I'm telling you now and what I'm telling you through this whole hour is generalities. Every individual human being is different. For instance, if you have other medical conditions such as a chronic lung disease or emphysema or asthma, maybe bacteria are a little more likely to occur as infectors in those bronchi. So you got to listen to what your doctor says. But I wanted to define what bronchitis means. sinusitis is the same thing. Usually a little more likely to be bacterial, but when we get a cold or the influenza, our sinus cavities in our head are congested with mucus and are infected by virus. So a sinusitis does not necessarily mean you have bacteria and need an antibiotic for your sinusitis. The timing of the sinuses being involved as part of a viral illness is likely to mean that it's a virus. Now, sinusitis can occur a week or two after you got over the common cold and the or influenza if you get all over everything else, but your sinuses are congested and you've got ugly mucus coming out of them, then maybe a bacteria has got there. Strep throat. So everybody gets a sore throat and they look in the back of their throat and it's red. I just have the sense that a lot of people think they have strep throat. Strep, and that's not true. Strep is a bacteria. It's streptococcal. It's a category of bacteria, not virus. Strep throat is a bacteria that causes pharyngitis or sore throat. But that's only about 20% of the times we look in the back of the throat and see an ugly, raw, nasty, pus-laden, raunchy throat infection that we think, is it going to be strep? 80% of the time, it's a virus. Have you heard me talk about viruses yet today on this show? So I just want all of us to be on the same page that a nasty, raunchy-looking, sore throat is not always strep throat. As a matter of fact, 80% of the time, it's a virus. Remember mononucleosis? That gives a raunchy, nasty-looking, sore throat, and that's a virus. The only way to really know if somebody's raunchy, sore throat is strep bacteria and therefore needs an antibiotic is by a test. Now, it turns out there's a rapid in-office test to distinguish that nowadays. Okay, now I'm getting down to the viral illnesses of common cold and influenza. I want us to look together at those two. A simple common cold is when you have a cough, runny nose, sore throat, maybe sneezing, head congestion maybe fatigue, maybe or maybe not a mild fever. And I say mild as in, and we're talking Fahrenheit here, so mild fever would be around 100 in the 99s or 100, maybe just over 100. Every individual human is different on how severe their common cold symptoms are going to be. And as you age or time change and different viruses that cause a common cold, as you get different ones, your symptoms are going to be different. Guess how many viruses there have been identified that cause common cold symptoms? 250 different viruses. 250 different viruses can cause the common cold. However, about 80% of the time, the common cold is caused by a category of viruses called rhinoviruses. So 80% of the time, a common cold is caused by rhinoviruses. 20% of the time, it's caused by a vast array of other ones. So here's an important statement. Generally, we do not have antibiotic medications against these viruses. We do not have antibiotic medications against these viruses, especially the ones that cause the common cold. The common cold viruses, they're very infectious. They spread from person to person very readily. They spread by the secretions from the human. From cough, you have to be pretty close to another person to cough the virus to them, though it wouldn't happen just in a big room. You got to be pretty close to the person. When they cough, you can breathe in those viruses and get the cold from them, or from nasal secretions, mucus from that infected cold person's nose. If it gets on their hands and then their hands shake your hand and then your hand goes in your eyes or your nose or your mouth, you can get the virus. Once you've been exposed to that virus, you might have symptoms within 12 hours or so. And this is the common cold I'm talking. Generally, the common cold lasts about 1 to 2 weeks, but sometimes it can be nasty and go for 3 weeks. You know what I'm going to do right now? I'm going to have us listen to a song. I'm going to, for a few minutes, and when I come back, we're going to talk about influenza virus.
Oh, help me, please, doctor, I'm damaged. There's a pain where there once was a heart. It's sleeping, it's beating. Can't you please take it out and preserve it right there in that jar? Oh, help me, please, mama, I'm sickening. It's today, that's the day of the plunge. Oh, the gal I'm to marry is a bow-legged sow. I've been soaking a drink like a sponge. Don't you worry, get dressed, cry my mother. As you fly me with bourbon so sour. Pull your socks up, put your suit on, comb your long hair down. For you will be wet in the hour. Oh, help me, please, doctor.
Dr. Ken Logan and the Doctors Inn. And today we're talking about viral infections. And what I talked about a minute ago was common cold and some other respiratory infection stuff. Now what I want to talk about is influenza virus. So I'm going to recap here. Respiratory infections, in other words, upper respiratory tract infections, cough, runny nose, head congestion, sore throat maybe fever. Well, those same symptoms that I just said are present with another virus or viruses called influenza viruses. Now, there's some differences in the symptoms to a degree that I'm going to talk about here in a minute. So, influenza, or some people call it the flu. First of all, I'm going to say this. Sometimes people will use the term flu, and what they're really, and when they're talking about some illness in the, say, the stomach or the intestines, and now, nausea and vomiting and diarrhea is not generally part of influenza or the flu. Now, there are other infections, largely other virus infections that can affect our stomach and our intestines, and some people might call that, quote, the stomach flu, end of quote. So, okay, you could say stomach flu if you wanted, but really, I like us to call that what we medical people call that, and that's a viral gastroenteritis. Gastro means stomach. Itis means infection or inflammation. Enter means bowel. So a viral, in other words, virus-caused gastro or stomach, gastroenteritis. Gastro-stomach enteritis meaning bowel. So viral gastroenteritis. And that ain't the flu. Flu virus or influenza virus is the upper respiratory tract virus. Okay, so how does influenza or the flu vary relative to symptoms from the common cold? Well, sometimes we can't distinguish them. A mild case of influenza, for all practical purposes, to me, looks exactly like the common cold. However, there are some influenza symptoms in some people, in a lot of people actually, that can be a bit different. And one of them, let's start with, is fever. Fever with influenza can get up to 103 or a little higher. So remember, common cold, you really don't get much of a fever. Maybe in the 99s, maybe bump up over 100. But fever in influenza can be up to 103. And chills often with fever. Body aches are common with influenza. Fatigue and tiredness is common with influenza. Headache as well. I already told you that nausea and vomiting and diarrhea are not part of influenza, except, now I'm going to say, except in children. So it can be a little more common in children, that is nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, with also their respiratory tract symptoms. It's not all children with influenza that get nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, but some can. And again, remember that influenza, the illness, is definitely different in severity from person to person or individual to individual. However, generally, the literature will have told me that influenza symptoms generally last from 2 to 8 days. Well, that's quite a spread, 2 days, 8 days. But 2 to 8 days... So it can really vary in the length from individual to individual or virus to virus, because there's various influenza viruses, which I'm going to be talking about and describing in a minute. And it also depends if the person has other chronic illnesses, how severe their influenza will affect them. But know that influenza has the possibility of being a fairly significant illness in some people. Generally speaking, can be, in some people, more severe than the common cold. And because of the fact that influenza can be a severe disease, there are a certain number of deaths per year in the world due to influenza. For example, and this will be numbers from the United States. Over the last 40 years or so, our worst year so far, when they've been keeping track of this, was, as far as I know, was in the year 2018. So that's this is 2020 now, so 2 years ago. In the United States, there were 80,000 deaths that year due to influenza. Well, contrast that to a different year with a different flu virus. In 2012, there were only 12,000 deaths. So not 80,000, but 12,000 deaths in the United States in 2012 due to influenza. Although it bumped up the next year in 2013 because of a different virus, flu virus, it went up to 56,000 that year of deaths in the United States. So the number of deaths varies greatly year to year, depending mainly on the specific flu virus that's present that year. And I'm going to get to those details in a minute. However, I'm going to look at that number a little differently with us. 80,000 patients the year of 2018. 80,000 people died from influenza in the United States 2018. That's 0.02 to 0.03% of the population. In other words, you just got to know that's a very small portion of our population of 350 million people. Now, it's true that any deaths at all is too many and not a good thing, especially when we're simply talking about a respiratory infection from a virus. I want to tell you, this year, so far, as of the end of December, this past December, there have been 3,000 deaths in the United States due to influenza. And how many of those were kids, children? 27. So of those 3,000 deaths, as of by the end of this past December, 3,000 deaths in the United States from influenza, 27 of them were children. Well, here's a little interesting bit of information, though. I'm going to break away for just a minute and tell you this. I know I'm talking about lung stuff, but I just had to say this when I read the 27 children so far this year as of December, had died from influenza in the United States. Let's compare it to something else in the United States that's actually human-caused, not virus-caused, that we have no control over, but human-caused. And that's deaths due to firearms in the United States. According to a CNN article I read in 2016, remember we were talking about 27 kids with influenza, and maybe it'll crawl up to about 100 by the end of the flu season this year. But check this out. In 2016, how many children died in the United States due to firearms? 3,143. That was about 15% of the childhood deaths that year. Well, so, you know, this influenza thing, that same year, 101 kids died, but 3,143 children died from firearms in the United States in 2016. That just blows me away. Some of the other causes of death in 2016 for kids were automobile accidents, 4,000. Cancers, about 2,000. Drownings, about 1,000. Drug overdoses, about 1,000. Firearms, 3,143. So that's all I'm going to say about firearms. Maybe another show, because that's a health-related issue. So I'll save that for another show. Okay. Back specifically to influenza viruses. Why does the severity of the influenza change each year? And why does the season look different year to year? Well, it's because the influenza viruses are different year to year. Sometimes a lot different and sometimes not too much different year to year, but they change. However, two things to know about influenza virus. One thing is that there are different kinds of influenza viruses. Mainly, there's two main categories of influenza virus: influenza A and influenza B. And not to be confused with hepatitis A and hepatitis B and hepatitis C, all that stuff. This has nothing to do with that. This is just influenza virus. There's an influenza A type and an influenza B. And not only are there two main categories of the virus, but there's one of the categories, the influenza A category, can go through changes year to year or sometimes over a few years. And these changes lead to some of them being worse when it comes to infecting us and some of them not being as bad when they're infecting us. The names, just so you know, the names of the different influenza A viruses use two descriptive letters. That is an H and an N. And those have to do with some of the, what they call antigens on the outside of the little virus capsules. But nonetheless, the descriptive letters for influenza A have to do with H and N, leading to, for example, one of the influenza A viruses is called H1N1. And one of the other influenza A viruses is being called H3N2. Now, the category of B viruses, however, don't go through nearly as much changing year to year. Therefore, one of the outcomes of that is, since the B doesn't change a whole lot, anyway, not usually, year to year, then us adults when the B viruses are going around, some of us adults are pretty immune to them because there's not been a change. And over years of being exposed to influenza B, we kind of catch a fair immunity to that. Where children, for instance, this year in the United States, the main virus as of the end of last December was one of the hepatitis, we're not talking about hepatitis, we're talking about influenza. So the influenza virus of greatest number as of the end of December in the United States was one of the influenza Bs. So influenza Bs, adults do pretty good with it compared to kids. So the kids are getting hit kind of heavy this flu season because influenza B is one of the big guys this year. Interesting, huh? And I'm going to get to vaccinations in a minute. Okay. And I know some of you don't like vaccinations. Okay, when is the flu season? Generally, it's in the end of the fall through the winter. Therefore, generally around the end of October through March, although that spread varies a little bit year to year. And we call it an epidemic. So each year, because the cases of influenza are quite high in the country, we call it an epidemic or the flu season. Again, the end of fall through winter. Prevention is key. And I say the first step of prevention has to do with keeping our immune system as robust as possible. And I'm going to kind of skid through this a little quicker than I'd hope, but the first part of that is try to stay healthy as you can all the time, which means get adequate rest each day, eat wisely with a balance of food types that certainly include vegetables, I say organically grown is best, fresh fruits, organically grown, plenty of fluids orally each day. Drink plenty of fluids orally each day for life. And then limit, stresses in your life are going to affect your immune system, both physical and emotional stresses. So do your best to stay on top of the decreasing your stresses. Easier said than done, but I know. And then the last thing is stay active. You know, physical activity helps us relative to our immune system. Now, I was going to say, when you're around somebody who's sick, try to not let them cough right on you or get, remember the mucus that's coming from their nose is infectious. There's infectious droplets from their cough. They have to be pretty close to you, like just 2 or 3 feet away from you in order for you to catch the virus from the cough. But the mucus on the hands, you don't want them to shake your hand. So, for instance, if somebody is ill, don't shake other people's hands when you got the influenza or common cold. And try not to do your best to not with your bare hand grab things like doorknobs and things like that other people are going to hold on to and then get the virus onto their hand. And then when they put their hand in their mouth or their eye or their nose, they can get the virus from you. Remember influenza is very contagious. And some of the symptoms, the virus can actually be present in you for a day before you get the symptoms. The virus can be in you. And then it lasts for 3 to 8 days, but I say you're probably infectious for the first 1 to 2 weeks. If your symptoms continue beyond that, such as a little cough, like into the third week, you're probably not infectious by then. Vaccinations are important. I know there's a lot of people out there who don't like vaccinations for one reason or another. But I'm going to tell you my opinion is flu vaccination is a good thing. It's not perfect, but it's all we've got. And nonetheless, I see it as an overall good thing. I favor it. The flu vaccine's been changing year to year depending on the viruses that are around. Remember, the various influenza A viruses change over time. Bs are a little more stable. This year's vaccine for flu is what we call quadrivalent, which means it's got four different influenza viruses in it. There are two which are influenza A's, H1N1, one of the H1N1s, and one of the H3N2s, and then two of the B influenza viruses are in the vaccine this year as well, B Victoria and B Yamagata. So it's a quadrivalent vaccination covering four different influenza viruses that tend to be around as best as can be determined. I favor you getting a vaccination, but not only for yourself, but for the community. you know, when we get vaccinations against ourselves, against infectious disease, we help to hopefully somehow help in a little bit of a way to decrease the load of the virus throughout the community. The more people that get in, vaccinated, the decreased in the community that's going to be as far as availability of the virus. So think about yourself, but also think about your community and your family. Especially if you got somebody in your family that's ill or such as chronic disease, such as chronic lung disease or emphysema or asthma or chronic kidney disease or AIDS or has cancer and is on immunosuppressant medicines. Well, for gosh sakes, get a flu vaccination and stay healthy as you can to decrease the likelihood of your loved one getting the influenza. When to get the vaccination for influenza? End of October. Halloween, baby. That's when it is. If you don't get it at Halloween time-ish, then get it any time throughout the flu season, such as until the end of March or early April. Currently, we're in January. If you haven't had a flu shot this year, then get one. And here you go. Who should get the flu shot? Well, guess what? Everybody older than 6 months of age. We're no longer saying, oh, only if you're this or only if you're that. The word on the medical street is everybody over the age of 6 months. Children less than 6 months, not. But pregnancy is a yes. In other words, get it if you're pregnant. It's bad to get influenza when you're pregnant. And by the way, when you get your immunity up to influenza when you're pregnant to help you not get the flu, well, guess what? Then when you deliver your baby has your antibodies to influenza. So you're going to help your baby not get influenza also. So pregnancy is a big yes on getting a flu vaccination. If you're 65 years of age or older, it's advised to get what they call a high dose influenza shot. You get a better, I guess our immune systems kind of, I guess, slow down a little bit on the response to a flu vaccine when we get older. And so it's advised for the 65 and older to get a high dose. There's two of them around. It's just a one shot, and one brand is called Fluzone High Dose, and the other brand is called Fluad, and you get either one or the other. You just need the one shot. Will the flu shot make me get the flu? No. And the reason is it's certain antigens from the flu virus. It is not the flu virus itself, so you can't get the flu from it. Here's a good one though. Does the flu shot make you not get the flu? And I'd say, well, you hope so. But in reality, it's about 50% effective. The term is 40 to 60% effective. But what that means is it's the best we've got. It ain't perfect. It's about 50% effective. But get it anyway. That's my advice. Two additional points about diagnosing influenza and treatment. There are some lab tests and some prescription drugs. Lab testing, if a person is seeking medical care for their symptoms, upper respiratory tract symptoms, their doc could make the diagnosis of influenza with a lab test. And however, the lab test, it's a little swab from the respiratory tract, and it's a quick test, a rapid test. In other words, you can know before you walk out of the office or out of the clinic, know whether indeed you had one of the influenzas. They're pretty sensitive testing, apparently. They're not always needed. The vast, vast majority of people who come down with influenza never have to obtain specific medical testing for influenza and do not need to obtain such. They know they have this illness, might be influenza, might be common cold. They take care of themselves at home and end up doing fine. However, if a person is not sure about the illness and are wondering if they have pneumonia or other illness, then they should seek medical care. This is especially true if somebody has chronic diseases such as chronic lung disease or emphysema, asthma, diabetes, chronic kidney disease. Seeing your physician or other healthcare provider helps you know what the illness is and therefore what to do about it, and what symptoms to watch for. In other words, what I tell people is, hey, if they have a common cold, I say, okay, you've had a cold for a week. Now you're not allowed to get a fever or trouble breathing now for the rest of this illness. If you get a fever or trouble breathing, you got to go in and see a doc. Sometimes or the physician or the healthcare provider might favor specific testing. If somebody's ill with other chronic diseases or if you're in the hospital. What else do I want to do? Prescription medicines for influenza. There's two general categories. However, there's some stuff that I think you ought to know about it. Remember, medications for influenza are not antibiotics such as that are given for bacterial infections. They just don't work the same. They're less potent. I'm talking about oral medicines for influenza. They do less of a degree of help when compared to most antibiotics for specific bacterial infections. You have to take them, these medicines, within 1 to 2 days of onset of symptoms. And then if you do take it within the first 24 hours of the onset of your symptoms of influenza, you might be ill for about 1 day less. They're fairly mild helps. They're a little bit of help only is what I'm saying. Now, if somebody is ill with chronic disease, and they can get to the doctor within the first 1 to 2 days, they're going to be more likely to obtain a prescription for that influenza help medicine. And people in the hospital, for instance, who are very ill, if they come down with influenza-type symptoms, it doesn't matter if it's 1 to 2 days since before they got to the hospital. Well, let's say it's 3 or 4 or 5 days before they got to the hospital, where they're still going to get influenza pills or oral medicine. I think there's even an IV product. But the idea is that if somebody's pretty sick, then they might get prescribed influenza medication, even though they're more than 1 to 2 days down the line. Remember, most people do not need medications for influenza. Stay healthy as you can. Stay away from secretions from people who might have influenza. Get a flu shot around Halloween each year, and seek medical care if you're pretty darn ill or have symptoms that you're not sure about. That's what I wanted to talk about today. And remember, relative to getting me to talk to on the doctor's end on a subject of health or medical conditions or subjects, you can let me know by emailing me at klogan.md. And that's the letter K, Logan, M-D, at yahoo.com. And let me know what you'd like me to cover. Okay, so I have a couple minutes. What do I want to do in a couple minutes? There's some things that I had planned on talking about today that I cut out of my talk, which I can go back to now. And what would that be? Well, I think part of it has to do with this screening. has to do with the subject that it isn't infection at all, but it's people who smoke or vape tobacco. Remember, cancer is the big sticky wicket on that, but also emphysema and chronic lung disease is another outcome from that. There are certain groups of doctors in the world who think low-dose CT scan testing of the chest should be done annually. If a person has what is between the ages of 55 and 80 and has what's called a 30-pack-year history of smoking. That means you smoked a pack a day for 30 years, or What if you did two packs a day? Well, that would be 15 years, and or within 15 years of quitting. But some docs don't think that's a good idea for various reasons. A lot of false positives with that. In other words, they find this little thing or that little thing, and then you get into a bunch of other x-rays and tests and whatnot. And remember, one of the things we like to not have is x-rays, a lot of x-rays to our body, because guess what? That increases the likelihood for some cancers. So, I mean, it's not straightforward like that all the time, but these subjects are not always clear-cut, and you got to talk with your healthcare provider about them if you have questions. Well, that's that, and I want you to know this. I want you to know that the Doctor's Inn has been made possible by you, generous contributors, KZFR listeners, and by ChicoCallCenter.com. Since 1999, ChicoCallCenter.com has been assisting businesses and nonprofits with their call center needs for marketing, fundraising, polling, surveys, customer service, and much, much more. ChicoCallCenter.com can provide vital information about your customers' needs to help plan, focus, and grow your organization. More information or employment opportunities. If you want more information or employment or find out about employment opportunities, visit ChicoCallCenter.com. And by Andrew Sprague Construction, certified in pervious concrete for our green future and serving the North State since 1983. Andrew Sprague Construction specializes in structural concrete for commercial and residential construction, as well as hardscape, including stained and stamped concrete. Contact Andrew Sprague Construction by calling 530-864-3273. And you know you're listening to 90.1 FM KZFR Chico, community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. And, oh, by the way, the opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, volunteers, board of directors, or underwriters. And what I'd like you to do now is stay tuned for Beatle Nation.
I gotta